Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, September 28th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everybody. There's major sarcasm in my voice there. It is 54 degrees with light rain, mist, and fog, says the weather app here in upstate New York. And yeah, today is one of those traditional Mondays where I just got up. I hate Mondays. I tell you that every week. And it's because the Sundays are never a day off. I am always in the middle of producing or working over the weekend. Remember, we have full live radio and new shows at least all day Sunday. Saturday's all new shows that need to be cut and get into automation. So, unfortunately, the weekends are never a break, and they're very busy. So, by the time everything is over at 1 a.m., I believe, for our programming on Sunday going into Monday, I typically like to stay up a little bit and just have fun, and it never works out for me for Monday morning radio. So, where did we leave off on Friday? I titled the episode, You Are What You Eat, and that's how we ended the show with the public service announcement, You Are What You Eat. Bovine leukemia virus in milk since the 1970s. Yeah, we talked about that for 2 days, Thursday and Friday. Pretty insane to find out that yet again, the food safety industry, that of course we're paying these people all kinds of taxpayer dollars for, has not been keeping us safe all this time. As a matter of fact, they've been allowing leukemia, bovine leukemia, that they've known about since the 1960s to be in our milk because they said, hey, don't worry about it. It's never going to affect humans. Well, yeah, that was per their 1970s test that showed that it wouldn't affect humans. And now they're finding I'll tell you what, these monitors are so bright, they're burning my eyes. They literally are. I'm going to have to turn this off. Ow. They are now finding bovine leukemia virus in breast cancer tissue. So now, of course, the race is on to see if they can prove that that's where it's coming from. One of the things that we also looked at was how important everything we eat is to our body and how when we ingest things or we inject things into ourselves or the doctor injects things into you or your child like a vaccine loaded with all kinds of chemical cocktails and recombinant DNA, how that actually affects your DNA. Like, what you put into your body affects what your body does. And, I mean, I have countless story after story after story from every direction where that holds true. And I don't know where we ever thought that by eating all this horrible GMO food or putting all kinds of chemicals into your body or into your baby's body, how any of us ever bought into the lie that it's just A-okay and nothing's going to happen and follow the leader because this is the way it's done and how you are immunized. I mean, it just, the whole thing does not make sense to me. Hold on 1 second. Right, you need to please excuse everything first thing. Literally 2 sips of coffee and out of bed. Spelling is difficult when my brain is this asleep. Okay. ICM ringing. I don't know if there's anything on my desktop, so I guess we'll find out the hard way. No, there isn't, but wow. That's a lot of noise. All right. Now, let's take a look at, I have no idea where we're going to go today. Today's a wing it show because it's Monday. But we had good old Michiu. I stumbled across him yesterday with my first cup of coffee. And you know how much we love Michio that we love to hate, right? I don't hate Michio. I just think he shills for the New World Order a little too much, but it's pretty interesting. He did a big think talk called The Dark Side of Technology. And just like when they had him on interviewing him about Fukushima, and he was talking about how, oh yeah, Fukushima's like hanging, dangling by your fingernails over a big open chasm at 180 miles an hour. My God. You know, he'll come out and he'll have these moments of clarity where he'll actually not be a shill for a few minutes and try and tell you how the good New World Order is good for you and we should be accepting transhumanism. So this is one of those moments. Michio actually comes out and kind of gives a good bitch slap to the mad science gone man, 180 mile an hour fast forward to lunacy. And the dangers of that lunacy. So here, let me suck some coffee and we'll listen to Michio.
Oh. In the book, Physics of the Impossible, I mentioned the dazzling forms of technology that we may have in the future. But I'm also careful to point out that there are wild cards. That is, technologies that can really upset the whole apple cart and, in fact, destroy the human race. For example, let's say you take the AIDS virus or Ebola virus and you weaponize it so that it's airborne. Think about that. You sneeze and it's a death warrant. And the question is that possible? Well, the answer is yes, it's unlikely. But
and if you've listened to this show, you'd know that, yeah, anything like that is possible and they're probably already working on it.
But it is because we know the genes that are responsible for being airborne. And we also know that the AIDS virus is actually quite simple. It has less than 10 genes. Also, we should realize that a government in the future may decide to weaponize a virus one day. And in the coming decades, high school kids will have the capability of, in some sense, manipulating life forms. One danger is that we'll have a typewriter. A typewriter where you simply type ATCG, ATCG, and it creates DNA in the exact sequence. And so it's conceivable that in the future, high school...
That's called CRISPR-Cas9. That's that software that they already have that makes DNA, blocks of DNA, like reusable .NET components if you were a programmer in today's world, where you can just swap them around, plug them in, and woohoo, mix and match and make any type of life. And he's right. At some point in the future, even a high school kid is going to have the capabilities in his garage or his basement to be able to do this stuff.
Kids for their high school science project will simply type letters on a keyboard and create different kinds of life forms. That's something that is actually fairly close to becoming a real possibility. And just remember also that the Spanish flu virus genome, the Spanish flu killed more people than all of World War I. Its genome is published on the web. You can download the genome of one of the greatest killers in the history of the human race.
I told you guys that. They published all that. They actually made that Spanish flu even more virulent than it was, and I believe it was the CDC that had worked on it. And then they argued about being able to publish not one version, but two into scientific journals for all to see as to how they produced this killer flu virus to wipe out half, three-quarters, 99% of all humanity. Yeah, I'm glad that's out there and little Johnny can use his tablet to make one in his garage.
And when people have typewriters by which they can type ATCG and create practically any kind of DNA they want, then we begin to realize that this technology may become so cheap, so available, that perhaps by chance or by intention, a super virus will be created that can wipe out most of humanity.
Hey, why not? You know, so one thing that kills me like I said, Meet You, the show we love to hate. Doesn't Meet You just sound a little too damn cheery about all this stuff? I was like, what? Yeah, well, hey, you know what? And it just may happen by accident or maybe even on purpose. Someone just might create a virus that'll wipe out all humanity. But hey, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it because, you know, if it happens, it'll happen quickly. I don't know. Like, why? I don't understand when he's discussing this and he's talking about all these future advances that are very potentially possibly true. It's a lot of stuff we've actually been talking about here, looking down the forward future timelines. But why he is just offering these like we should accept it, right? He's not offering any type of solutions or, hey, all of us scientists need to get together and stop this insanity train. No, not at all. Because it's the exciting transhumanist future that's coming.
And then on the physics front, there's another nightmare. And that is laser enrichment of uranium. When the United States first began to enrich uranium, we did it the hard way. We created this gigantic plant in Tennessee, and we had these huge hundreds of miles of pipes by which we took uranium hexafluoride, shot it through with a tremendous amount of electricity, and then slowly separate out heavy uranium hexafluoride from light uranium hexafluoride.
I'm assuming that is the Paducah plant that he is talking about. That's what they did at Paducah. I think that was Tennessee, right? Paducah, Tennessee. Isn't that Paducah? I believe it is. I keep thinking that it should be Paducah, Kentucky, but I'm pretty certain that that's the name of the plant in Tennessee, is the Paducah plant. And that's what they did. They enriched depleted uranium that came out of nuclear reactors, and they collected it from all over the world. That was like, and that place is closed now as of the last year and a half or so. But that was part of that big agreement that they had with Russia. We looked at that so long ago where we even were reprocessing nuclear fuel rods from Russia in that plant. But, I mean, we pretty much were a big storehouse. And what they do is they reprocess that uranium to then make uranium to make nuclear weapons. But what Meet You saying here is that, you know, oh, that old way that we used to have with uranium hexafluoride and pushing that through pipes and whatever, high pressure, however he was talking about doing it. We don't have to do that anymore because guess what? We can now do uranium purification utilizing lasers. And he talks about this. All right, hold on. Everything is so slow here, so don't mind me.
That's how we built the atomic bomb. Today, you can do it with centrifuges. By spinning uranium in liquid form, the heavier form of uranium, U-238, goes to the bottom. The light, U-235, rises to the top. And that's how you can make atomic bombs using ultracentrifuges. Now, there's a third way. The third way is with laser beams. It turns out that the electron shells of U-235 and U-238 are almost identical, but not exactly identical. By the laws of quantum mechanics, the energy levels of U-235 are slightly misaligned to the energy levels of U-238. You can create a laser beam with exactly the energy of the difference between these two, so that you can activate one but not the other. In other words, laser beams can be used to zap these atoms and separate out U-235 from U-238. Well, this means somebody in their basement at some point in the future might be able to build a separation device to create U-235. That's
My connection is so choppy here, but I think you caught that. What this means is not only can Johnny, with his CATG cutting software, CRISPR-Cas9 software on mommy's notebook, not only can Johnny create a killer flu virus in his garage, but he also at some point in the future, you just heard what he said, might have a laser that can separate out U-238 and U-235 to refine it to be able to make a nuclear weapon in his garage. Wow, what a wonderful future we have to look forward to.
Nightmare that we don't have yet, but it's a nightmare that we will have in the coming years as the price of laser enrichment of uranium starts to go down. A third thing to worry about is global warming.
Oh, you knew he had to throw that in there.
How much human activity drives human global warming, but we do know the Earth is heating. If you extrapolate that into the future, Manhattan, parts of Manhattan may be under dikes around certain cities like San Francisco, Boston, and New York City. New Orleans may, who knows, have to be simply taken off the list because most of it is below sea level and may not be able to sustain a rising level of seawater around the world. Also, the United States Pentagon commissioned a report from the Global Business Network asking what is the worst case political military if global warming gets out of control. And their conclusion was it could spark a nuclear war. Think of, for example, the border between Pakistan, India, Bangladesh.
Now, this skipped because I moved my mouse while he was talking. I don't know. You know what? The blood moon made my connection suck. But basically, he says that there was some study that was commissioned for the Pentagon asking about global warming and what that could mean, and apparently their paid study, and I'd like to know who they paid to do the study, but their paid study discovered that global warming is a matter of national security because what? Oh, it could lead to nuclear war. So here, let's see if I can play that statement again. Hold on.
A nuclear war. Think of, for example, the border between Pakistan, India, Bangladesh. That's a hot spot. Bangladesh could be flooded in the future by global warming, in which case hundreds of millions of refugees could go flooding into other countries. And nations
like
that
now
may actually use nuclear weapons to defend their disintegrating borders. So in my book, Physics of the Future, I talk about the bright side about fantastic technologies that we will have in the next 20, 50, 100 years. But hey, let's be blunt about this. There's also a dark side.
Oh. All right. And let's cue up the creepy music. All right. I'm going to have to kill Skype here. That echo is super annoying. So Michio just laid it all out on the table. The 21st century into the 22nd isn't looking that cheery, but hey, you know what? There's all kinds of wonders that are coming, and don't worry because they're going to have your little robotic implant ready and waiting for you. As a matter of fact, oh, I shouldn't have hit the stop button. There's one more video I want to share with you speaking about implants. So I see this story last night, and honestly, I thought it was a fake headline, but no, it's not. There was an ancient bacteria that they dug up out of Siberia a few months ago. And actually, I don't know if it was a few months ago, but I saw the story a few months ago. We have not done the story, but we will. But listen to what this Russian scientist decided and what he did with it. He said, you know, this bacteria has been around for 3.5 million years. And so we want to research this bacteria as part of our looking for genes that will promote longevity and immortality.
Came through the ages.
That was pretty useless.
Eternal youth, mankind's impossible dream through the ages.
Potion, and you'll never grow even one day older. Don't drink it and continue to watch yourself rot.
And you know what's really interesting about this whole thing, again, this immortality project, don't think that this isn't going on all over, because it is. There's all kinds of immortality projects going on between Kurzweil and Google and the Russian billionaire. I mean, it's where all these dollars are going to try to cure aging as if it were an illness. And they mention that because aging is an illness. It's just things getting old. And they want to be able to cure aging. And I believe that in the one interview we watched with Kurzweil, that was his terminology, curing aging.
A Russian scientist thinks that maybe the secret of external life may have actually been found. Well, deep in the permafrost of Siberia, a living discovered that is old, actually very old indeed. Anatoly Boshkov says that there's something about its DNA and the genes as well that gives this cell extreme longevity and protects it from damage as well.
It's trapped inside of the ice. We found a living scene. We can bring it back to life. If we can find the mechanism how that bacteria stays alive, and then we probably would be able to find the tool to prolong our own life.
An eternal life. So tests have already begun on human blood cells, plant crops as well, and even mice right now. So scientists can't say exactly how the bacteria works, but they do insist that the impact is obvious. Well, mice, they live longer, and even when they do get old, they're still having plenty of babies. Boshkov, who discovered the bacteria, decided to become the first human guinea pig himself, and he's actually already injected himself.
All right, I'm going to stop here. So they have injected it into mice and plants, and they've seen some effects even when the animals did age, that they continued to have babies into old age. He believes that the fact that these bacteria have managed to survive and still be functional 3.5 million years later means that there is something in the genes of the bacteria that is important to finding an immortality gene, quote-unquote, let's say. And so what he decided to do, he said, screw this. I'm not going to wait around for all the science. I'm going to inject myself with 3.5 million-year-old bacteria to see what happens.
I started to work longer. I never had a flu for the last 2 years, so it still needs the experiments. You see, we have to find the mechanism how that bacteria prevents aging. So I think that is the way how the science should develop. What keeps that bacteria alive? What is that mechanism preventing the aging damages? And how can we use it for our own benefits?
How insane is that? And I mean, the guy isn't dead yet, so I guess that's a plus. But the fact that he's injecting himself with 3.5 million year old bacteria that they found in Siberia tells me that these elite are definitely, definitely motivated to find a way to live forever. I don't know about you. I mean, I have friends. We've talked about this, and I have friends who said that they would step right up. Wow, nothing loads, guys, so I guess I'm not going to be able to get that story. They would step right up and be in line to get the implants or get whatever longevity solution they're offering. But I know I wouldn't, and even if it was, you know, dire circumstances, I don't know, if it was the end and they offered me nanobots and to cure my ails, what ails me, I don't know what would happen there. But see, that's how they work. They work on the desperate, and they try to get you to sign up for something you wouldn't normally sign up for. But I know that living forever is definitely against the way nature works. I don't think I'd want to live forever. How could you live forever? I think you would be bored beyond belief, and life has meaning because, oh, here it is. Life has meaning because it is finite. If there was no real beginning, middle, or end, then wouldn't mean as much. All right, if we can get this to load, Again, it's Monday, so... And it really is before my first cup of coffee. So everybody cut me some slack. Oh, it's loading. I can sing half asleep. Here we go. I guess this is not the same one. I thought they both started with a 3, and my brain said, oh, yeah, they're the same. But no, just because they start with a 3 doesn't mean it's the same number. So this Russian scientist we just heard the clip from was injecting 3.5 million-year-old bacteria found in Siberia. But there was another one, and this was from 20 days ago, September 8th, 2015. Frankenvirus emerges from Siberia's frozen wasteland. So, you know, if you guys remember, we talked about the bacteria that they were pulling up out of the cores. No, Lake Vostok. That's what it was. And it was the Russians again. Oh, holy shit. One of the Russians are probably working on some pretty nasty biotech here, thinking about this. The Russians were down in Antarctica, and they'd been doing all kinds of research. I know they'd been doing, like, deep, deep cores and pulling stuff up. But Lake Vostok was that underground lake that they discovered. And they had found some prehistoric bacteria in there that they had taken some samples of. And this was already probably, 3.5 years ago maybe. We had done that story. That was way back in the beginning. But I remember thinking all that I could remember was The Thing. If you remember John Carpenter's movie in Antarctica with those creatures that I don't even know how they ended up getting there. But ended up not being too good for the scientists. In the end, because they did get mangled by the thing. So I titled this story, Bad Idea, 3,278, Frankenvirus Emerges from Siberia's Frozen Wastelands. Scientists said that they will reanimate, a 30,000-year-old giant virus unearthed in the frozen wastelands of Siberia and warned climate change may awaken dangerous microscopic pathogens. Now, that's twice in 29 minutes that we've just heard climate change as being the catalyst for dangers to national security. Now, isn't that interesting? Climate change is going to be the crux of all kinds of surveillance and security, especially against bioterror agents. And what comes along with that? Well, when you have bioterror agents, you always have to have a cure. So let's sprinkle lots more money into developing Frankenstein-like solutions using RNAi and CRISPR-Cas9 technology to build ourselves new life form cures. I don't know. I mean, this is just pretty nuts. So, yes, climate change may awaken dangerous microscopic pathogens. So there could be a pathogen apocalypse on the horizon. Reporting this week in PNAS, which is a scientific publication, the flagship journal of the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, French researchers announced the discovery of Mali virus, MOLLIVIRUS, Mali virus Sibericum, Sibericum, the fourth type of prehistoric virus found since 2003. Oh, how exciting. So they found four of them so far. And I'm sure that one out of Lake Vostok was one of those four. And the second by this scientist's team. Before waking it up, researchers will have to verify. They'll have to verify that this bug cannot cause animal or human disease. Well, right. Just like bovine leukemia virus couldn't cause cancer, right? like we thought, right? I don't know. You know, this is like going to Mars and bringing back rocks, not really knowing if there really is any microbial life up there. I mean, yeah, we say there isn't, but hey, by the way, at 11:30 today, NASA is having a meeting, and I know nobody trusts them, but they said that they're going to make an announcement, and they have solved the age-old question with a big question mark at the end of it to, of course, make us come show up and see what they are going to announce. I am assuming that maybe they're going to tell us that they found where all the water was locked up on Mars. I don't know. Some people think they're going to tell us they found alien microbial life. Possible. But, I mean, it would be like going to another planet and not understanding what's there, thinking we decontaminated, like, oh, I don't know, the Ebola that we irradiated that never was killed. Or, I don't know, like the surgical instruments that we put, we boiled or put sterilization fluids on and then discovered 30 years later that malformed proteins aren't quote unquote killed with standard sterilization procedures because what? Oh, they're not alive. They're just proteins. You know, we have so many examples time and time again of science telling us one thing and then after they've screwed everything up, they're like, oh, guess what? We were wrong. But you should believe everything they tell us, right? Science is always wrong until they learn something new. Anyway, before waking it up, researchers will have to verify that this bug cannot cause animal or human disease. Now, I don't know, shouldn't we be voting on this? Kind of like the Large Hadron Collider. Let's see if we can make primordial goo, which, by the way, they just announced they made primordial goo. Remember learning about that in, like, sixth grade? The Big Bang, boom, seconds later, there was primordial goo, where all the elements were kind of mixing together, and anything can form the very early, early beginning of the universe. Well, we've made it in the laboratory. How insane is that? That's something that shouldn't be happening on this planet in any way, shape, or form. Deep, deep space to be messing with energies of the level of creating big bangs. Anyway, so all these things, yeah, don't worry about it. You know, creating primordial goo and trying to split open dimensions on this planet. Which there are a lot of prominent scientists who have said, well, yeah, the chances are small, but we could tear a hole in the fabric of space-time. Sure, it's possible. Probably won't happen, but, you know, there's a 0.0001% chance that maybe the Gorgons will come through the time rift. Oh, God. When we read story after story after story after story and they go, ah, we didn't know. Well, how about you set your ignorance aside, your lack of having the type of brain that looks at every possibility before you jump the gun. You know, I like to make pretty sure, like 99.99%, especially if I'm going to be going with something like a 30,000-year-old pathogen that I'm going to be reanimating. I'd like to be 99.999% certain and probably even do it in containment, like some place where there is no way, even if it is virulent, there is no way ever that anyone is ever going to come into contact with this thing. Because, hey, 30,000 years ago, it lost for a reason. I don't think we should be helping Mother Nature resurrect something. Anyway, okay. To qualify as a quote-unquote giant, a virus has to be longer than half a micron and a thousandth of a millimeter. Molyvirus sibiricum, the soft virus from Siberia, I guess is what that translates into. comes in at 0.6 microns and was found in the permafrost of northeastern Russia. Climate change is warming the Arctic and the subarctic regions at more than twice the global average, which means that permafrost is not so permanent anymore. And I'll tell you, this is some of the stuff that Dane has talked about with the methane mass expulsion, melting the permafrost. And it is because of the UVC rays getting through the ozone. And it's being able to penetrate deeper into the oceans. That's where the permafrost melting is allowing this methane to escape. But also, it is melting a lot of the permafrost that has existed in these Arctic regions for millennia. And I know, say what you will, I do think our environment's fucked up. I mean, I'm not denying. But whose fault is it? I mean, I think it's a combination of things. I don't think I did it or you did it. These greedy corporations that filled refrigerators and whatever with CFCs for 50 years, and they knew that it was causing damage, but they didn't give a shit because, hey, in July in Texas, man, we were selling air conditioners like hotcakes. You know, I'm sure there's HARPs using HARP to do testing in the atmosphere. I had been doing some reading the one night talking about using the HARP frequencies, how it was punching holes through the ozone. Don't quote me on that one. But what's interesting, and I mentioned this in chat a few days ago, and the reason why I tend to believe that there is something going on with the ozone, they warned us for a long time that we had ozone holes, right? And so for years, we were all putting the scare to put on that nanotech sunscreen that isn't going to save you much before going out in the sun. I fell into that because we had ozone holes. It was like the 80s. But what's interesting now is we all admit that, yeah, you know, over the last 5, 8, 10 years, the sun has felt really fucking hot in the summer. Regardless, if that air temperature is only 72 degrees, and I felt it, I had quite a number of days like that where it was cool here in the summer. But you get in that sun is roasting hot. And we did some measurements, a friend and I have been noticing how the actual quote-unquote official temperature had been really off, a huge delta between the official temperature and what the actual temperature on the ground showed. But then what your official temperature is, and again, we dug into like how do they arrive at the official temperature, and there's some convoluted formula. But you would think that if you had an official temperature, you would be taking a temperature in the shade, and you'd be taking a temperature in the sun, right? Because a temperature in the sun, unless you're planning on walking through the woods or having some sort of sun cloaking device, if the sun is out and you're motoring down the highway on the blacktop, you're going to feel whatever the temperature is when the sun is shining. Well, we had a couple instances where it was like only 82 in the thermometer that's sitting out there that was kind of in indirect sunlight. And on the railing with the digital thermometer, I hit 116. Yeah. Huge deltas. I don't know how we got off on that, but I'm just saying. Oh, I know about the ozone. I've been doing some of my own experiments, and I've been definitely seeing that there's some oddities in what's being reported versus what's being observed on the ground. So then I went online, just so you know, and I would like to challenge anybody who's interested in this to do this. I went online. It took me some time to find the UV maps. UV maps were always available on weather.com for many years. And if anyone noticed too, UV has now gone up to 15. Did you notice that? It didn't used to be. It used to only be up to 10. It's now up to 15. And anything over 8 is pretty dangerous. And a lot of these southern cities, if you pay attention, I have that site actually bookmarked, so I'll go look in the summer, and they do a 3-day forecast. A lot of the southern cities are up around 10 or 12 on a daily basis, which is literally frying you. But there's no really a big alert saying, and it literally says when you look at what each of the UV numbers means. And this, I think, is on NOAA's site. I found it. When you look at what each of them means, I mean, you're talking physical cellular damage at 10 and above. You should stay inside, is what it says. Yet, hey, we're at 10 to 12, 13 even, I've seen, down near Miami and in the super southern regions. You don't see any alerts about staying inside. Well, why are we getting such high UV? Well, we don't typically, it seems to me that we don't have any proper protection. So let's go around the center latitudes where these UV readings have been so extremely high. And let's find a NOAA map that shows the research of how much ozone we have in the central regions of the globe. I challenge anyone to find me that data. The only data I've been able to get to come across is data on the poles for the ozone holes. And that's where they've been saying forever. When I was a kid in the 80s, we had to shed a tear for New Zealand and Australia because this is how they spun it. Our chlorofluorocarbon use here in the United States that quote unquote created the ozone holes was actually affecting the southern hemisphere. The people that back then in the 80s wouldn't let nuclear subs into their ports and were very about being clean and their pride. I mean, they hadn't been globalized yet back in those days. And so our thirst for money and want and disrespect for the environment was affecting the southern hemisphere. And I remember that. They're like, oh, New Zealand and Australia have the ozone hole. They're all going to get the skin cancer so we can keep cool with our air conditioner. Well, where is the data for everywhere else besides the poles and down in the extreme northern and extreme southern latitudes for the ozone layer? I really, if anybody has that data, I would love to see it because I spent about a week and a half scouring weather records and all the different sites that I have, sites that I didn't know about, sites that I used to have that they've now since taken down and disabled that used to have information that we could use for climate prediction and different types of readings that they were taking in the environment. And a lot of that stuff is gone, but I have not been able to find it. So why, and by the way, the data that's out there for the poles on the UV is outdated. I think I saw it was like 2012 or 2008, just like we see in the FDA stuff we were reading on Friday. Oh, yeah. They're quoting us inspector data from 2008. It's 2015, people. I would have to say that somewhere along the way, something's had to have been updated, right? So if anybody would like to do some fun research, I would love to see an ozone map, real-time NOAA data, or NASA, whoever's doing it now, whichever agency is bagging and tagging and mapping. And you know, I mean, how they can't say they don't have this data. We are able to scan Mars with those dual satellites that are going around them. And I think it had said, I just saw something on it again yesterday. It had said they were using some sort of infrared technology to be able to scan the surface of Mars. And they could get signatures of every element. Because, of course, you know, the mining companies are talking about it. Every element that exists in the Martian soil. Well, if they could do shit like that remotely, they most certainly will be able to give me a map of what the ozone looks like for any of, and I wouldn't even say even the central regions. I would say from New York State all the way down to someplace like Fiji, I would like to see what the ozone looks like. Because I have a big feeling that it might have been a lot worse damage than what we knew. And maybe it wasn't the chlorofluorocarbons. Maybe it was all kinds of other stuff. Who knows? But I really think that if there was anything out there that's causing this quote-unquote global warming, which, you know, we saw a story back a few months ago where they said, well, yeah, there was a global cooling that they talked about for about 10 or 12 years, but guess what? We just recrunched all of the climate numbers for all history, and we discovered that that little 10-year period where we saw global cooling really didn't exist. That was a mistake. The buoys were wrong, and we fixed it. So now, in our new report, there never was a cooling. Nope, 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 nope. We redid all the numbers, and hey, we must have really been wrong. I don't know, ridiculousness. Anyway, the fact of the matter is that climate change has now become the drumbeat. We just had the Pope leave the United States. I saw his American Airlines plane. I saw him actually show up on the tarmac, and they were playing drums, and they all gave him kisses. They shoot him on the plane, and he flew off from home for home. But while he was here, he stirred the climate change pot. He also stirred the war pot. He stirred all the globalist pots to really turn the shit up. Boiling frog, right? And by the way, I guess, talk about boiling frog. We have the Putin. Putin is addressing the UN today, so this should be interesting. And Obama decided that he's also going to speak there. So he wasn't going to speak, and now he decided he was. Maybe we can all join hands and start singing Kumbaya. Oh, all right, guys. Let's get back to the story. I really went off on a tangent. I'm sorry, but it's Monday. Hey, we need to take a break sometimes. It says climate change is warming the Arctic and subarctic regions at more than twice the global average, which means that permafrost is not so permanent anymore. And like I said, I want to see the data. I have only seen maps for ozone for the upper northern and lower southern latitudes. I want to see the rest of the planet. I want to see how much UV is getting through. Because like I said, the UVC, which by the way, if you look into UVA, B, and C, UVB is what causes burns on your skin. UVC, according to NOAA and any of the other atmospheric agencies out there, UVC does not ever make it through to the lower levels of our atmosphere because what? We're protected by the ozone layer. And it actually says that. And don't worry about it because UVC, if we got hit with UVC, it would cause some major damage to our cells. And as a matter of fact, back, might have been last summer when that whole Ebola, quote unquote, outbreak was going on, they had talked about coming out with a way to disinfect against all these new superviruses and bacteria that were out everywhere. And the way they were going to do it in the hospitals was to use a UVC disinfection robot. Also, those little Steripen things that you can use to sterilize your water with this little wand, and you just stick it in, you turn it on, turns purple, bloop, and it kills all the pathogens in that puddle water you just sucked out through your life straw. Now, life straw would work too, but if one of you didn't have a life straw, Johnny put a hole in his life straw. So you got this little wand, bloop, and UVC kills it all. But if that's getting through en masse, and there's half an ozone left, it would explain why we're seeing all the dead trees, why we're seeing all the dead bugs, why we're seeing all this ecological damage happening with no explanation. It would explain the warm blobs in the Pacific Ocean. And there's a lot of crazy shit going on. So anyway, I just wanted to ramble about that point for a few minutes because I know everyone rolls their eyes at climate change thinking that it's, you know, a big conspiracy. And maybe them turning around pointing to us saying that now we got to suffer the consequences because of what we did. No, we did not do this. If there was any damage done by man, it was done by the greedy bastard corporations that have sucked Mother Nature dry to make a buck all these years, polluted the shit out of her, so all of us end up with cancer and ruined our protection from the sun. But I mean, it could be natural too. There's all kinds of theories. You know, I mentioned the other night too about us as we're going through the galactic plane, and that does happen. And just because it sounds fanciful, it's not. We do make a rotation in our solar system every 36,000 years or 12,000 years or 15,000, whatever the number is. We come all the way around in a circle. We end up back at point zero again. And I've been reading some research that they'd been doing in astronomical physics, and they were looking at dark matter. And this is kind of some of the stuff they were researching at CERN. They've been messing around trying to find dark matter, even though we don't quite know what it is. Even though we don't quite know what it does. We think it's out there. We think it takes up the majority of the universe. That's where all the missing matter is. It's all dark matter. But there were two stories, not just one, two, about dark matter and some of the thoughts on its effects on the planet. And one of the thoughts that they had had, and they have proof that they were messing with this, that dark matter could potentially be interacting with and heat up the core of the planet, which would then in turn make the planet get warmer. And they had found some archaeological or geological, not archaeological, geological evidence of this happening again. Oh, who would have guessed it? On a cyclical basis. So here we are now moving into this region of space where they seem to think that there might be a lot more dark matter. And things are starting to heat up. Who would have thunk it? So I don't know. Lots of crazy stuff and a little too much for Monday morning and my puny little half-asleep brain. So what's the end result of this 30,000-year-old gargantuan bacteria that they're going to reanimate? It says a few viral particles that are still infectious may be enough in the presence of a vulnerable host to revive potentially pathogenic viruses, said one lead researcher. The regions in which these giant microbes have been found are coveted for their mineral resources, which would explain why they were in there digging around in the first place, especially oil. Oh, it's the black oil monster from the X-Files. And will become increasingly accessible for industrial exploitation as more of the ice melts away. And yes, you know, when Obama was up in Alaska a month or so ago, and he shed a tear over the melting glaciers, and then he turned around and in the other breath, he ordered icebreakers up there. Because you know what? They've been creaming themselves for 20 years, rubbing their hands together, not being able to wait for the day when that whole Arctic region is wide open with no more ice. Because you know why? They talked about this back in the 80s. If that were open, that is a super shortcut across from east to west, without having to go through the Suez Canal, without having to cut around the tip of South America if you have to take the long way to transport oil. And as a matter of fact, the whole northern region of the planet is loaded with oil. That's why everyone's trying to stick their flag up there and claim it all. The Russians say it's theirs. And we're going through Canada, I believe, because Canada has lots of maritime, so they obviously have a claim. Well, we're, of course, back in Canada. We're going to come up there with you, Canada. We're going to help get the oil out of the northern hemisphere. But, you know, as they're crying the blues about global climate change, oceans rising. What did he say? New Orleans isn't going to exist anymore. Well, no, not if you're below sea level. I would see that as a problem. But hey, they got these new floating cities now that'll come pick you up on the coast. But don't think that this possibly hasn't been done by design. There are bazillions of dollars in oil and minerals waiting to be found in the untapped wastelands of the nether northern regions of the planet. All right, finish this story in the last minute. If we are not careful and we industrialize these areas without putting safeguards into place, we run the risk of one day waking up viruses such as what? Oh, smallpox that we thought were eradicated. So you know what? That damn climate change again. Climate change is now going to be responsible for an uptick in smallpox coming back here in the world. So don't worry, though. We're going to have a new type of vaccine that's going to take care of all that. So this, even though this global warming is scary and it's going to awaken all this stuff that we thought we'd gotten rid of a long time ago, we're going to have new and improved vaccines that'll work forever. Yeah, isn't that convenient how that all works out? In safe laboratory conditions, yes, just like those at Dugway Proving Ground with the DOD and, oh, the CDC. Clavel and colleagues will attempt to revive the newly discovered virus by placing it with single-celled amoebas, which will serve as hosts. So I guess they're going to infect another organism. All right, guys, we only have about 15 seconds left. Sorry, it was kind of a ramble, but hey, it brought up some interesting points. It's Monday, so make sure you stick around as Lonnie Clark is up next. And we have at 6 p.m. replays of our interesting times with Tim Kelly. He has Corbett on today as his guest. Reality Bites with Neil Foster. He had Alan Watt on as his guest. And there we go. Unlock the Door with Michael Cross. Truth on the Tracks. Brand New with Brandon. Cutting Through the Matrix with Alan Watt. And Antimedia with Nick Burnaby and D.B. Schwartz. Have a great Monday.